Hello and welcome to another episode of Creative Weirdos, where I talk to new and old friends about creative weirdness. And today I'm so stoked to share this conversation with my new friend Steve Berg with y'all. Steve is a wonderful actor and has been in a ton of really fun things. He's also a beautiful thinker of the weird and has started to dive deep into his hometown mysteries in Nebraska. And we have this beautiful conversation about all kinds of stuff that are classic themes over here. He just started a new podcast called High Strangeness, as in Hello Strangeness. H-I Strangeness is so good. Tons of great episodes over there already, and I definitely think y'all will enjoy it. I can't wait for you to dig into this one. Go check out the links below and support Steve and everything he's doing. You'll definitely hear some familiar voices over on his podcast. And yeah, thank you all for being here and listening and sticking with the transition of this whole show. It really means the world to me. I can't wait to share more conversations like this one with Steve with y'all. Have the best day, and I'll be back with another conversation next week. Bye. Anytime.
I've been listening to your show.
Thank you.
Obviously, like, I'm into the arts as well, so, like, people who... This is for fun.
Keep it going. We're in. Yeah. I'll do an intro, and I'll do a proper introduction before the podcast and everything. So just keep going with where you're going.
Yeah, I feel like I've noticed at this age in the people who I sort of gravitate towards in the 40 on a high strange world is that they're artists, even if that's not what they do for a profession. They are creative people. And I feel like creative people are drawn to the weird and the absurd and the surreal. And I tend to only in terms of high strangers, to me, the absurd, the surreal, the comedic, in terms of UFO cases, I think that's why a lot of us probably love John Keel stories and like the cases he has in there, because we're talking about flying tin cans and like Michelin men looking, entities. I mean, like, it is just so weird and absurd. And yeah, I think creative people are drawn to the weirder aspects of high strangers. That's just a working theory. It could be completely false.
It's the basis of this whole show, to be honest with you, Steve. It's like 100% could be the thesis of it. And I think the humor is so important, because I think that most creatives do, whether it's intentional or just natural, they play that trickster role a little bit in the culture and in society. And I think that the humor is so important, whether you're looking at things like the paranormal or even like spiritual texts, the spiritual stuff that resonates so strongly with me has always been like your Ram Dasses and the people that have like a humor around the whole thing.
Agreed.
And I was listening to this scholar, a religious studies scholar, talk, and the host asked him, what do you think people get the wrong with religious texts that are like kind of being revived these days? And he's like, the humor is always left out. It doesn't translate. It doesn't shift from cultures. But even like he used Adam and Eve as an example. He's like, that is supposed to be a joke. There are double entendres in there. There are all these things that are lost culturally. And that's what like we've lost. And if we can re-imbue some of that humor in more spiritual conversations, then it'll do a lot better. I think that's beautiful.
I could not agree more. Like, I think, like, while I take this, all this stuff dead seriously, I think if you're taking it literally the entire time, like when you're looking at reading these old cases or even new cases of really absurd, surreal, kind of funny encounters, I think if you're taking them literally with like that, real scrutinous eye, I think you might be missing the point.
Yeah.
I think you can take it very seriously and even believe 100% what happened. But like, there's like, layers to these encounters that are really weird. And I think some people just take it literally and you're maybe missing the point. That's just my personal opinion, though.
I completely agree, Steve. I came in through this stuff via your like Terrence McKenna, Ram Dass. Like, I grew up being a weird kid and liking scary stories, tell in the dark and all that, got into punk bands and kind of left behind a lot of the weird stuff for the more material punk world. That the scene I grew up in was much more based in real world problems and enacting.
I hear you.
And,
can I ask you, punk is such a
Oh, yeah.
I think some people think of punk as just three chord music, but like I think of punk as like even bleeding over into like indie rock, and I guess post punk. Oh, yeah. That maybe that's more post punk, you know. But like it's all the same umbrella, right? You know, like
yes.
What kind of music in terms of punk was specifically what you guys kind of.
Totally. We functioned in a scene that was like very much in, it had everything. Delaware is very small. So on a show, you're going to have like very post-punk, like heavy doomy bands. And you're going to mm-hmm. have very Ramonesy pop punk bands, which was right. where I always kind of fell uh-huh. into was the more Ramones
beautiful.
Early lookout 90s lookout style
sure.
stuff. But the overall, like when I say punk, I'm talking about the overall DIY aesthetic of like
uh-huh.
book your own fucking life and like
yeah.
learning how to like, you know, do things on your own. And
yeah.
I mean, I always gravitated to that stuff because of the accessibility. Like when I can't, Green Day was what introduced me to all of this. Like Dookie came out at such
yeah.
a seminal time. And I was like, oh shit, I can play these songs and
yeah.
I can figure this out. And it was like that next generation of what the Ramones did, where you realize, oh, this is accessible. I'm not
right.
talented, but all
right.
you have to do is learn three chords. And like, so that whole part of it was very important to me, but I definitely didn't function in that scene as much. But what was always interesting to me was you would go to a show and I would see it as like this magical, like esoteric thing happening. There's 200 kids in a basement that are all there for the same reason, like very unified, singing along to these, you know, songs. But if you talk to them, no one's like directly experiencing it that way. They're all
yeah.
like kind of disconnected as part
yes.
of this thing. So
yep.
it's one of those things that like, it kind of took me away from like getting into more of the weird stuff for a while. And then I got back into it via like almost like having kids and trying to figure out what the fuck I think about like death and like
uh-huh.
stuff like that, and like
right.
diving back down the Terrence McKenna and Ram Dass. Robert Anton Wilson was a really big one for me, like very
wow,
formative
yes.
for all this. But getting going from that to John Keel and everything that's more standard, I kind of came at it from the like less of the nuts and bolts starting point and that
mm-hmm.
type of thing, and had much more of an open, I was like, oh, all these people are saying the same thing, whether it's Ram Dass, who literally half of his work is from channeled texts of Emmanuel, like
right.
most of his like most famous sayings and stuff are from what he would call his spook friend, his disembodied entity
yes.
friend Emmanuel. Same thing with Terrence McKenna, he would just talk about talking to the spirit of them. I'm like, these guys are all just talking to ghosts, they just don't
yeah.
call them ghosts.
Exactly. Their lens is a different thing, but we're all talking about the same stuff.
Exactly.
I often, when I'm like a way I like to blow off steam, a lot of times I don't feel like watching television or, you know, absorbing myself into a film, and I'll play like a mindless video game and listen to Terrence mm-hmm. McKenna lectures.
Oh,
because
yeah.
there's so many on YouTube and they're all wonderful.
So
and to me, he had probably one of the greatest masteries of the English language. The guy was doing stand-up comedy. He was doing like weird spoken word. He was philosophizing on the spot. I don't think any of his lectures were planned at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like,
mm-hmm.
you know,
nope.
You know, he's exhaling, you know, a giant rip of hash as he's walking out. And man, he, you know, he flowed. And
yes.
you've probably seen this being a Ram Dass and Terrence McKenna fan. But in case your listeners haven't, there is or was, I hope it's still out there, this half hour video of Ram Dass
My
and
favorite.
Terrence McKenna. Where are they? Like Rome? I can't remember where they are. They're in somewhere
Prague.
Very exotic. Prague. Yes, thank you. And in this beautiful cafe. And it's like, I think they're doing a My Take of My Dinner with Andre. Because
the waiter's
film,
interaction the whole time is like
yeah.
genius. Yes, yes.
Terrence is getting like tiramisu. Ram Dass is just, you know, twirling the beads. They're drinking espresso.
Yes.
And you're like, I'm like listening into two, like, you know, it feels like you shouldn't be there. It's great.
Dude, you just gave me goosebumps because like you brought up one of my favorite parts of watching that is watching the way the difference between the way that Ram Dass and Terrence McKenna are tapping into this beautiful mm-hmm. thing. And it is Ram Dass will close his eyes and twirl his beads and
yep.
think for a second. And then he'll respond to McKenna's question, where McKenna's just rapid fire like this,
yep.
this.
Yep.
And he says one of my favorite things in that whole lecture, where and McKenna has a few raps about this, where he went to India just like Ram Dass did and all these guys, and he saw what like Maharaji had to offer and Neem Karoli Baba and Mare Baba and all these like very, and he got what they saw, but his problem was that he is a material being and he can't consume this stuff materially, where if he goes to Peru or South Central America and takes the mushroom, he's now in it. He's now there. It is a material experience. And his whole point is that we are these material beings, that we shouldn't deny the material world. We should try and experience the spiritual world by combining the two. And it's this mixture of the two.
He saw it as an alchemical process.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and,
I
like,
think
and
that's
that,
so beautiful.
And that's the glaring difference between Ram Dass and Terence McKenna is Ram Dass is like, no, you can get there through meditation and yoga and like inner, you know, introspection. And Terence McKenna's like, sure, you probably can, but I choose like the instant way of ingesting a heroic dose or smoking DMT, like, you know, like.
Dude, 100%. And there's so many instances where like both. It's the perfect example of all of this stuff getting to the core that I love, that it's all about paradox and it's all about this and that. And both are right. Like, you know, when the famous story of Ram Dass taking the super strong acid to Maharaji and Maharaji being like, what? This is old yogi medicine that's been here forever. They stopped doing it because there's better ways. And essentially telling him that this is a backdoor access to something you can come in the front door if you want to.
Yeah,
and I think that is as valid as Terrence saying, yeah, that's true. Or you can just kick the doors down and blow the fucking roof off the place. And like, that's just as, I think both ways are very valid and it's all getting at that same point. And like, that's kind of my favorite stuff. And it's, I love that you brought up that interview because the interviews that McKenna does are the things I go back to the most. The, the 15 minute one with John Mack is probably my favorite thing on UFOs ever.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
I agree.
When that interview's almost done and John Mack's like, Terrence, can I just say one more thing? And he lays that whole rap about how he thinks the UFO is like trying to break the Western mentality of the world by making them accept something material coming from the spiritual world. And like, I'm like, that's it. Like that's so beautiful.
And you know what? It's interesting. I have like, so, you know, Carl Jung wrote, and gosh, it's somewhere behind me. I can never remember the name. It's like something in the flying saucer. So Carl Jung, you know, at the end of his life was really interested in UFOs. That was actually one of the things he was really like concentrating at the end of his life. And his book essentially is like the UFO is this mandala that is immaterial, but can present itself as material, meaning it can like leave, you know, trace evidence on the ground, stuff like that.
Yes.
But he was really saying the same thing those guys are, is that it's 100%. A cultural awakening that different cultures will have different lenses, and it doesn't matter what it is. It's here for us to help us evolve. And it almost goes back to like our worship, you know, and I think having it be a UFO is like so apropos, because if you think about humankind, we have always worshiped technology. We've always 100%. Worshiped things that are 10 years ahead of us. You know, like it makes us wonder and think, and, you know, it's even like inspired how we've, you know, worked on technology and getting technology out. I think like whether people know it or not, folklore, mythology, even the reality of high strangeness has driven technology, which 100%. Is something we all as humans, whether we know or not, we worship it.
When you start listening to, well, before I go into this, I just pulled up my little notes because I keep like little quotes on my notes app that like help me throughout like the day and like interviews and stuff. And it's so funny because I have this one from McKenna that I've had written down forever, which is exactly what we were just talking about. But, and I think it's from, I can't remember which rap it's from, but he says, saying the flying saucer is a psychic object does not mean it's not a physical object. Jung went to great pains to state that the realm of the psychic and the realm of the physical meet in a strange land of never, never land that we don't have the tools to yet explore. This is where the paranormal and the flying saucer resides. And I'm like, they nailed it. Like, why is there even like, why? Like, it's so fun. Like, again, it goes back to what we were talking about before we recorded with farming. Like, the information has been there forever. Like, I feel like so many people have nailed it. And it's just all about repackaging this stuff for new people to understand. And like, I was just listening to you and Rob's conversation from your episode this week with Rob Christofferson and how he was calling 2017 like the Great Reset with the New York Times article and everything. And I think that is a part of it. Like, I think that like this phenomenon forces resets. And I think those resets are starting to happen faster and faster and faster and faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, I don't know why, but that's interesting to me.
I agree. And like when, you know, like obviously I think reset means different things to people. People who fear great change are going to think that's a negative thing. And they're going to, you know, probably have a conspiratorial bend to it. Like, I don't know. The New World Order is forcing a great I mean, like, you know, I know a lot of like the QAnon people think Biden is the great reset president.
Yes, yes.
Jesus Christ or whatever. It's so dumb.
Dude, but if anyone wants to listen to an amazing podcast on that topic in general and specific, Douglas Rushkoff's Team Human podcast just had one of the best conspiracy PhD like scholars on that I've ever heard. And they talk about all the Great Reset stuff in such a beautiful way. Like, yeah. Doug Rushkoff's one of my favorite thinkers in these worlds. And
right.
Like, it's hard to talk about conspiracy these days in the way that he does it. And it's beautiful. I highly recommend, not to cut you off, but
yeah. No. And you know, I mean, like, I also, you know, I do think it's one of these things where people prey upon, you know, people who, like, you know, are espousing, you know, putting out these new repackaged, like, conspiracies. They're really preying on people who are, like, I don't know. We could get into a whole thing, but, like, I feel like it's such a cruel thing to take these, yes. like, these people who are obviously very sad, you know, like, maybe, like, you know, I don't know. We America's such a, like, in a capitalistic society, it's just designed to kill and screw people over. And I think, like, we're so ripe for conspiracy theory here because there are so many people. We're just watching, like, an oligarch system being formed in this country with, like, four people controlling 50% of the wealth of this country. And, you know, it's
so true.
I think it's just, I think they're going to get worse and worse, I'm afraid, you know, like.
Yeah, no, I think they are. And I mean, again, not to make this a complete McKenna podcast, which I've done plenty of in the past, but I don't mind. I think he was so on point with the great attractor at the end of time, and that, like, there was going to be this great shift in 2012, and it wasn't what people thought it was going to be as far as, like, the ending of the apocalypse, but something giant shifted there, and it's been shifting exponentially since then. Mm-hmm. And he talks a lot about how we're going to go through this great birthing phase, and it's all about, like, getting through that painful birthing phase. And he talks about, like, imagine an alien coming here and seeing, like, a human giving birth without any he'd be like, save that, like, this is horrible, traumatic, bad.
Right.
And we're going through that right now, but what we have to invest in is the imagination, because if we can invest in the imagination, like, McKenna's love for the imagination is one of the things that, like, always brings me back to him. And I think he's right that if we can really invest in the artists and the imagination and using these, you know, this global weirdening that's happening to allow people to understand that we all are, like, this, we're these imaginal beings that are way more powerful than we give ourselves credit. And back to what you were saying as far as, like, mythology and folklore leading this stuff, if we can reinvest in that and change the folklore and the mythology, I feel like we're in a good we're in a place where we can get to a good place.
I think so too. Like, I'm not completely, like, you know, down on humankind. I am optimistic in a lot of ways, especially when I, like, you know, I have nieces and nephews who are from maybe your kids' generation, like, or, like, you know, even, like, the kids who are teenagers now, they're different than when I was a teenager. I was just like a dunderhead who was, like, just, you know, looking for someone to buy me a 12-pack of Bush Light, go see a punk show. It was very, like, small world life. But I talked to my, like, you know, nephew who's, like, 16. And it's like, oh my God, it sounds like he's, like, read Howard Zinn already. You know, like, I mean, like, he's so worldly, and they have such good, like, ethical values already. I'm like, that's one thing I think about this interconnectedness of humankind right now that is positive, that you can find these groups of, like, really positive people who want to affect great positive change. And I think the best way to do it is through art. You know, I'm biased here, but, like, I think art is something we all need as humans. I think if art was, like, magically disappeared, I think humans would disappear too. Oh, I think it 100%. Is how it's, like, just as, it's so important. And I mean, like, I've kind of been talking about this lately, but I find high strangeness, the way I approach high strangeness and think about high strangeness, it's just an art form. Yes, you know, it's like improv or acting or writing or, you know, painting.
100%.
I don't see it as that different. Now, there is that's why I kind of feel sorry for people who are obsessed by the governmental aspect of these gatekeepers. Like, if we could only get through this gate, we'd have all the secrets to the universe. Where I do not think that is true at all. In fact,
I'm with you.
So to me, the artistic approach where it's, like, beautiful and you can kind of put your own, like, personal lens on, like, what this encounter meant, you know, back in 1967 or something like that. There's some kind of, like, it requires us, I feel like, this phenomenon. I don't think it is there without us, I guess. And that sounds 100%. Really woo and weird, but, you know, that's just kind of my own personal feelings.
No, I 100% agree with you. And it's when you started your show and led it off with Greg Bishop, I love his idea that this is the universe's art project. And, like, this, and I think that that is 100% accurate. because I mean, as accurate as anything these things can be, you know, like I use that word very loosely. Yeah. But like there's consistencies that I see with that statement in so many ways. Like one of my favorite stories, and I haven't told this one for a while, so I'm going to go ahead and tell it. One of my favorite stories is from a visionary artist. He's called the Ungoogleable Michelangelo, right? He's got a podcast called Self Portraits as Other People. Really good podcast. He's talked to like Eric Wargo and like a whole bunch of people we are familiar with. But he has this experience. He's a, you know, psychonaut and stuff and very into the DMT world. And he has these consistent meetings when he does DMT with these lizard people. These he calls them giant grasshoppers, he actually calls them, right? Sure. And he's like very familiar with them. He knows like he can communicate with them when he's in that world. And one time he's like, I'm going to ask them why they come to see me. I know why I come here. Like I come here because I'm experiencing this giant world of other, like, you know, cosmic awareness that I didn't know was out there and all this. But why do these beings interact with me? So he does the DMT and he asks them, he's like, why do you come here? What do you care about me for? And essentially they tell him that they come here because in the space that they exist in, there's no time and they can't create things without time. So we are their artistic expression. They come here to express themselves creatively through us because without the linear experience of time that we have, there is no creating, there is no destroying, it just is. So they have to come here. Wow. And that like sounds exactly like what the floating silver orbs that abducted Grant Morrison and Kathmandu said to him when he asked him, them, like in his whole abduction experience that, you know, I've talked about a million times on here.
And I love that story too. Disinformation, it's so good. That speech is one of my favorites. Yeah.
By far the best thing that I ever found on the internet. So like, it's so good. And, but his whole story, essentially they said the same thing to him, that they come here because we have a special interaction with time and he needs to they need to express themselves through us. And the comic medium is the perfect way to express it because it plays with time so much. All of that. And I'm like, these little like threads that go through there make me think that there really is some real strong, and I've said a bunch that I feel like we are touching something similar when you go into that creative space and you're working on something, you look up and 4 hours have passed and that's just as missing time as anything else. Like there's all these parallels that are just right there and like anybody can tap into it. It's one of those things. That's what I love about like this type of thought behind it, is it gives it something that like is almost you can act on, or you can like you can utilize it in some way, if that makes sense. But yeah, no, I'm sorry, that was a lot of rambling.
No, but I mean, like, look, I see it the same way, and I love the way you just expressed that. That makes so much sense to me. And I would have to say, I think there's really something to that, because one of the reasons I think like I'm so drawn to the surreal, absurd, like comedic aspect of it, because I feel it leaves a more of an imprint.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to like the kind of like the homogenistic 80s, 90s, like gray alien abduction stories that were so same. But when you go back to the 70s, you know, 60s and 50s, every encounter case, ufologically speaking, was different almost.
Yeah.
We're talking about like hundreds of different like alien looking things.
It's so true.
Their messages were changing constantly, you know, like they would say really absurd things like, what time is it? And then someone would say 4:30. You go, no, it's 2:30. I have to go to Brazil. And you know, they would say like the craziest shit. And I think one of if I can put a rationale behind what the phenomenon of one side of us, but I think like the absurd and comedic quality makes it more memorable.
Yes.
Because like when I think about the cases from like the 80s and 90s, they all kind of run together and it's hard for me to pick different ones out. And I read a lot of those books, you know, especially as a kid growing up. But the ones that stick out to me are these ones that are unique. And they almost have like this David Lynch dream logic quality. And that, I mean, like I could talk about David Lynch and how I think no one has nailed High Strangeness better.
Oh yeah.
No, when the credits 100%. Roll and I hear his sound design, his beautifully like art directed, like lockdown shots, his whole auteur style. And not that auteur is always the greatest, but he is, in my opinion. But he creates a world to where, like, to me, it feels like a High Strangeness simulator.
Yes.
Like you're walking into this weird chamber where you're in the in-between world. When, you know, for 2 hours, you're in a magical place where, like, I don't even think about my outside life when I'm watching this movie.
Yes.
Even on the 27th rewatch of Blue Velvet. I'm in this high strange Fordionic world.
100%.
I'm completely buying it into, you know?
Two things about that is I think Lynch does that so well because he's tapping into that TM space that is the same space as the space we were just talking about. That psychedelic. I think it's all part of that same tapestry, right? So he can actually correctly portray the strangeness because he visits there so much.
He's there that, you know? Twice a day, every day for the last 40 years.
Exactly.
And
And I think another part of it, oh man, how do I say this part? I think that there's a thing with people like Lynch where it's almost as much like you don't ever have to enjoy a Lynch movie to enjoy Lynch. Like you could not like his movies and still really like him as his life is art. Yeah. Like what he does sharing his ideas and his TM, like the documentary he made on TM and that whole tour. And like that's as important as the movies he's making. Same thing to go back to Grant Morrison, like I think The Invisibles and the fact that he put in the back of a mainstream comic book that was going to comic shops every Wednesday or once a month for years. And in the back of that comic book, he told you how to create your own sigil and spread chaos magic to this whole new group of people that would have never known who Osmond Austin Spare is or any of these.
Right.
Like he's sharing these magical systems with a whole new group of people. And I think that's part of why the magic works. Eric Wargo has this really cool line in one of his books about synchronicities and how he thinks that sharing the synchronicity or sharing the dream is part of the mechanism that enacts the synchronicity, that if we don't share these things, they would never actually happen. And that to me is beautiful, and it resonates with like every time I really get into somebody that's got a different way of looking at the world or a philosophy, it always comes down to connection and interconnection and sharing a community. And that's the stuff where I'm like, it resonates as true and right to me, because I think we are meant to like be intertwined and like get back to that idea of either like animistic or more panpsychist, or like, you know, the idea that we're consciousness is not local. We're all just like part of the same thing, trees, plants, all of it, you know?
Right. Well, you know, it makes me think of this. I mean, cause I've sort of had this notion the last couple of years to where I feel like, and it might be because, you know, like I think like 10 years ago, unless you were like into Carl Jung or, you know, Keel books, you hear the word synchronicity, you'd be like, what was it, a Police album? You know, like no one really knew what it was, you know. And then people started like, oh, is it like deja vu? But now, I mean, maybe not mainstream, but the idea of synchronicity and people talking about synchronicities, like it's out there, man. It's in the zeitgeist now. It really is. And I wonder, and I actually feel that in the last 3 years, since like since the pandemic, really, I've been having regular synchronicities that are very meaningful to me, even though it can be really mundane things. But I feel like, and I've been actually talking to friends like, yeah, maybe, and I wonder if it's people, you know, it's either A, maybe that it's just out in the world now. Maybe Hellier had this big impact, you know, like, but not everyone I know watched Hellier. There's a lot of people who I'm friends with who are like deeply into this stuff. Yeah. But I feel like, has there been an acceleration of synchronicities because more people are aware of it? And that would almost go back to what Wargo was saying about if you're not sharing it, it's not. So, I mean, I wonder if that's, you know, it's something to think about.
I think you're onto something. One of the things I thought about for a second when you were talking about the transition there between High Strangest Cases being absurd and the variety to the very, you know, kind of monoculture style that we see in that 80s. And like, how much does that parallel our own culture? Like, you know, in the 60s and 70s and the 50s, there's all these booms of revolutionary culture and media.
Civil rights. Well, yeah, and, like, exactly,
and
man.
Then it gets very like homogenized and recycled in the 80s and 90s, and it's the first time you start seeing repackaging, or not the first time, but like modern day repackaging of things. And like there's like cartoons are being made for toys, like toys are made first and the cartoons are made to support, like there's this capitalist thing that really kind of goes, like how much of that does that impact those, like the gray, it's kind of like what we were talking about with the farming, like monoculture came in and took over because it was the thing that the capitalist system supported the most. Like did the grays come in and take over because capitalism supports like one unified thing? It's more efficient, you know, that way.
I've never thought about that, but man, I really do think you're onto something. I can't remember I was reading this wonderful article, it's probably like a year ago, and this economist was talking about, I think it was in the Atlantic, whatever. I don't read the Atlantic that much. But anyways, he was saying that in the early 80s, you know, after Reagan was in power for 2 years, America perfected capitalism. He was not saying that in a positive way, but he's like, you can see where he started deregulating everything, was putting the power in the military industrial complex and, you know, all these big corporations who were just pillaging the oil companies, just ruining the world. And now we're all like, you know, seeing the what happened. You know, we're experiencing it now. We're in a climate crisis, people. But, you know, and that would kind of go along with like the Greys, because the Greys, like, not many people, you know, if you read Mac's book or even like, especially like old Bud Hopkins' book, I'm not putting a bunch of stock in, you know, I'm not a big, you know, hypnotic regression person, but like,
we wouldn't have Mac without Hopkins. Like, everything's there for a reason.
You're right about that, man. You're right about that. But like, it was so negative. There was such a negative.
So negative. Yep.
It was all negative. And I remember as a kid, it was like aliens and UFOs became dark. It went through a very dark period.
It's true.
And, you know, like, it was just scary. It's like you have no, like, agency over your own life. These things can just come through your walls, take you, inject you with things, perform these awful, like, waking surgeries. I mean, like, that that coincides with the Reagan years and the perfection of capitalism. So you're onto something, man.
And to tie it back into something like I was just thinking about this again, because I've been going down a huge Ram Dass rabbit hole and he talks about death so much. But to tie it back into, that's why, like, when Joshua Cutchin came out with The Ecology of Souls, I was like, oh yeah, he's got it. He nailed it.
Yeah,
but there is, like, that was a big shifting point in the way we treated death in the culture, too. Like, hospice started not too much before then. And, like, you know, Ram Dass says this a lot, but, like, when you look at the way we treat death in America through a hospital, every death is a failure. And, like, every hospital, every doctor is like, oh, no, we lost that one. We didn't do it right. Where it's like, no, death is death. It's going to happen. It's what's supposed to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, taking that kind of, you know, that surgical motif that comes up in the 80s and 90s with alien abductions, as well as, like, losing that interpersonal connection with, like, death and, like, being it. Like, I think there's, like, connections in there, because I think that part of, like, what I see the phenomenon trying to do is insert novelty into our lives and remind us that there are things that are very natural to us and we forget that. And I think death is one of those things that, like, we all going to experience it and we try to brush it over, but it's the same thing. Like, one of my favorite parallels between, like, a Ram Dass and the paranormal, right, is Ram Dass talks about the whole point of training and kind of reincarnation and stuff is so that when you die and the lights go out and then you hear that voice that's like, hi, you don't react as, like, you're scared. Like, what the fuck? Am I dead? Yeah. I thought I was dead. Why is someone talking to me? You react so that you're like, oh, hey, how's it going? Now I do this. Cool. What's going on? Same thing, like, if you encounter an entity or something that's scary, a cryptid, if you react, you're like, oh, what the fuck? And you react in fear, you're going to get that fear back. But if you, I'm like, oh, shit, you're here. What's up? You're going to have a more playful interaction with it. So, like, that whole co-creation and, like, the way that you frame things, I think, is very important, whether when it comes to anything that's unknown or a big, big question mark, you know?
Right. Yeah. I was chatting with my friend Barbara Fisher, who I think is just one of the greatest minds currently. I love her so much. Yes. She is such a wonderful person.
That was my first place hearing you. It was on 6 Degrees. Like,
Nice. Yeah. I think the world of her and Morgana. But she always, you know, kind of has told me this too, because I've talked to her a lot about, you know, she's kind of like almost a mentor to me in terms of, like, cause, like, you know, the last couple of years I've been trying to infuse myself with the phenomenon a bit more, where I'm going out and talking to people who have experienced things and constantly going to wildlife management areas where people have seen, you know, Black Panthers or Bigfoot and stuff, or, like, know, like, Nebraska has a pretty interesting high strange history, I think. And, but she's always like, intent. She's like, Steve, intent is everything. Everything. If you have a positive intention of a positive experience, that is what you're going to get back. And I always think about that. And I think it's also so sweet and lovely. Like, you know, like, I think a lot of people who are into this stuff, they kind of look at it. It's like, oh, either you're a weirdo loon, or, you know, it's like dark negative stuff, which is, like, probably more of a Christian puritanical, which is a big part of American society, obviously, you know, like, and so there, it has been this thing to where, like, you are marginalized if you are into this stuff. But I see those walls breaking down a bit today, you know, which I like.
Me too. And I think the more that we talk about it in this way, that is this, like, art project that's relate, like the more we can relate it to those type of things, the less that we're going to have those, or the more those walls are going to break down and the less new walls are going to come up. Because I mean, I think at the end of the day, just like Barbara said, intent is everything. Mm-hmm. And knowing, I'm very grateful to have encountered Robert Anton Wilson's work early on and learning about reality tunnels and like how that's supposed to work. Like you're supposed to put these shoes on and, you know, walk in them and then take them off. And you might take a little bit that you learn from that walk, but you're not taking the whole walk. Like maintain agnosticism at all costs. And like that, I think the intention plus that mentality, you're just in to live in a more magical world. I've been lucky enough to talk to Mike Lellen a good amount. And one of the things that I love that he says a lot, like what he sees as the result of all of his experiences and all of his mania and paranoia and all the stuff he went through, right? He sees that it's allowed him to know on a daily basis that he lives in a magical world, that like the world is magic and it doesn't need to be, it's enchanted, doesn't need to be re-enchanted. We just have to recognize it and view it that way. Yeah. And I think that's what the phenomenon at its best can be utilized as, or its purpose, or whatever you want to say.
He is so, I absolutely adore Mike Lelland. I remember, like, you know, because I remember when he had his hidden what's his website, his old podcast that I love much, Hidden Something.
It's Hidden Realms, not Hidden Realms. I'm mixing up Tenny's podcast Realm of the Weird with
I literally listened to an old episode last night, so I'm gonna find on this bad podcast.
Google it, because you'll do it faster than I'm. It's funny because I've listened, like, the Mac Tony's episodes I've listened to a million times. And like how much you can hear him going through it when talking to these people. It's not like anything from modern paranormal podcasting. No, it's so much more genuine and just like,
yeah, we are listening to a guy grapple with his experiences in real time. Hidden experience is what it was
experience.
Called.
Yes.
So totally. He had, you know, this great blog that coincided with the episodes, and he was having these experiences as he's writing this blog and doing these interviews. And you can see here in his voice sometimes how vulnerable and troubled he is. He's like, I don't know what's happening. And he, you know, even admits, he's like, these are therapy sessions for me.
Yes. Yes.
100%. And they sound like it. We'll never hear another podcast like this.
No. No. I've asked him several times, like, when are you going to start a new podcast? When are you going? He's like, I don't, what am I going to do? Like, how, you know, he's
I shared it all. Exactly. You know,
I can't disagree.
Well, I would say that I love the episode you did with him. Is so wonderful and dense.
Thank you.
I think I've listened to it twice. Like it's one of the best.
It's the longest one that I've done for sure. And he's one of those dudes that I've just wanted to talk to for so long. And like the whole way he reached out was so crazy. Like that was the biggest, weirdest synchronicity of my life. Like that was like one of the weirdest things. I've told it several times on here, but like that. And since then I've had several synchronicities around him, because we'll text every once in a while. And like when his new book came out, I texted him and congratulated him. And I was going down to my parents' house. Right. And my parents live in a pretty standard suburban neighborhood here.
Right.
And we're out back and I'm playing with the kids in the backyard, and my parents and Allie and my wife are sitting up on the porch, and everyone gasps. And I'm like, what, everybody just got, what happened? And they're like, an owl just passed. Like you could have reached up and grabbed it. They're like, if you saw it, you would have been able to like pull it out of the air. I didn't hear it, didn't see it, none of it. Everyone else saw. I get back in the car and look at my phone, and I'm like, oh, I have 3 text messages from Mike. That makes sense.
That's not even weird. It would be weird if it didn't happen, right?
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
I remember, like, I don't know him really. Mutual friends, but I was having lunch, and I lived in LA for 20 years, and, you know, recently back in Omaha, and Greg Bishman and I would hang out quite a bit, and we were getting lunch, and at the end of the lunch, we were like, we used to like just kind of walk around the neighborhoods, walk off the lunch a little bit. And he's like, oh, hey, you want to come meet Mike Lelland? I'm like, wait, what? He's like, oh yeah, he's crashing at my place for a couple of days. He's in LA. I'm like, yes, I do.
That's awesome.
And yeah. And I walked into, you know, Greg's place, and Mike's just sitting on the couch. He's like, oh, hey, how are you doing? And I felt like it was like, he was like, I mean, I don't want to sound weird, right? But like it felt like he was a glowing human being.
Yes.
And I was like really nervous, because I mean, like, he didn't know, but I felt like I knew him, because I had been like in real time following his blog, listening to every podcast episode multiple times, mind you. And so I was kind of a Clellan super fan. And totally. I think he could recognize I was nervous, and he was so nice. And he reached over, grabbed a book, signed it, and gave it to me. I was like, oh my God, how much do I owe you? And he's like, nothing.
That's the best.
He was like, you owe me nothing. And I was like, wow. I have it here in my like signed High Strangers book collection. And I look at it, and it warms my heart every time. Because I find him, not in just the High Strange world, one of the greatest minds out there. Because he's like, he's got that artist mind, and he talks about these subjects we love in such a beautiful and poetic way.
Yes.
Where, like, I feel like if I had a really, you know, absurd, crazy, High Strange experience, I would love to talk to him almost first.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Like, before my wife, you know, I would love to, like, Mike, you don't know me, but man, I just want to tell you this. Can you help me? You know, like.
He would be very helpful. No, absolutely. I've been lucky enough through this podcast. I mean, I feel like I relate to you without knowing you on certain ways.
Yeah,
where like, I get to play the dummy on this podcast. Like, I'm never the expert. I talk to people that are – my goal is to always talk to people that are smarter than me.
Same and,
like,
here, man.
Like, I'm the outsider. I'm the artist that, like, likes paranormal. Still, you know, like, that's kind of the role.
Same
like
here. I'm with you. Like, I'm an actor who loves paranormal stuff.
Exactly. And, like, I feel like having that role for us allows us to talk to these people a little bit differently. And I don't want to say, like fanboyish, but a little bit more of like, hey, your works meant a lot to me, and like you can like really kind of get down. But
I you can probably hear, especially in like my first couple episodes, I'm like really like talking super fast. I'm like really nervously, like, I look at these people like a lot of people would look at like Jack Black or like, you know, like Jack Nicholson. To me, I don't care about other, I mean, I care about David Lynch a lot, but in terms of people like in Hollywood stuff, I've been around a ton of celebrities, worked with them.
Yeah.
Never starstruck, really. After like the first two years of being an actor. But when I like met Mike Clellan, I felt like I was going to faint.
Yes.
It felt like I was meeting Paranormal Elvis. You know what I mean? Like, and when I remember, John Tenney was in Omaha, like probably like over a year ago. He was doing, it was the first time I ever saw him do a lecture. And I felt like I was watching George Carlin in his diamond rock hard years, where he was just killing it on stage. I was like moved to such a degree. And even before the show, we had like known each other on Twitter. He smiles at me, goes, hey, hello, friend, to me. And I was like, oh my God, this guy, I'm already like, I feel like so close to them already, you know, like
100%.
And then I saw him do his thing. And then we went and had drinks afterwards. And I was just like glowing for a week. I'm like, this guy is like who I want to be like, man. He has got it figured out, you know?
Totally. There's certain people that I've gotten to talk to on this thing that you can feel that through the fucking Zoom, which is weird. Dude, like, you can throw it through the, like Clellan, Tenney are two people that I would say 100%. Yeah. And like both, I mean, Tenney, he's pushed me, like he was one of the first like High Strangeness people that I like after I like got back into this via McKenna and around, like Tenney was one of the first people I heard talking on podcasts where I was like, oh, this dude gets it, like this dude is somebody like super special. And when like having him on was like a bucket list. Like I'm at the point now where I'm like, I don't like Greg Bishop's one on my list that I'd love to talk to, and like there's a
you
few
should
other that
you,
I,
he, that I would best, love man.
To But like these are people that like Mitch Horowitz was one that was the same way when I got to talk to him. Like I've read their books. They've like kind of changed my life in certain ways.
And I hear
like,
you.
I feel we are in this cool position to have different conversations with these people. Like I've gotten so much nice. My podcast is not the most listened to at all. But like what's nice is I'll get messages after having someone like John Tenney on, and people are like, I'm so glad I didn't like I heard a different side of Tenney. And I feel like it's because we have this relationship with these people that we can kind of get past the like boilerplate stuff that they get asked all the time.
Right.
Right into like the fun stuff and you're get there, you know?
Dude, you're exactly right, man. It's actually nice to express this to another person. Like I feel like you and I probably are maybe like very similar in terms of like our intentions for getting into this thing. I wanted an entree into being able to talk to people like, you know, 100%. Tenney, Josh McCutcheon, Great Bishop. Yep. Barbara Fisher. That is why I started the podcast. I mean, like I obviously like I don't like have any like notions that I'm gonna make a lot of money. It's going to be really successful. I just wanted to have an excuse to ask these people to chat with me for an hour hour or 90 minutes. And because to me, it's like nothing. This has been such a great experience. Even like talking to you, it's like, this is just so fun for so many years. I've always been into this stuff. There's never been a time in my life where I have not had a High Strange book, like on my book, you know, on my bedstand. And most of my life, I did this like in like almost like a closeted 40-an, you know, where like a lot of my friends, like when I would start talking about weird stuff, it almost like repelled people in a way, especially like I think in my line of work, you know, where I'm like, oh, I don't want people to think I'm too crazy, then they won't hire me, you know. So I would like just shut my mouth up about UFOs, and every once in a while I would like, you know, people would talk about UFOs, like, yeah, they're very interesting, aren't they, you know, like. But now I've kind of like come out of the closet and, you know, full blown, you know, I don't care. You know, I'm a weird dude who's always been weird. And
yes.
This is, I love weird ass. I love all weird stuff. It's not just like 40 dude. Stuff. Like,
yes.
I like
yes.
weird outsider art, weird outsider music. I like weird exotic foods, you know, like, I mean, it's the weirder, the better, man. Like,
yes. I love that you include outsider art in your podcast intro. Like, I think that's so special. And I think, I'd say one of the big, I'm 100% on board. Like, that is why I started this podcast. Like, I am so lucky to get paid to draw stuff for a living, right? Like, my main gig is doing illustrations for a coffee company
where
I get free reign to, like, draw whatever I want. So half of our bags have, like, Bigfoot or goblins or you, because that's, like,
beautiful.
Like, I realize that the more that I am honest and genuine with putting what I really love and am inspired by out there, the more it comes back and the more it resonates. Right. And like, I started this podcast because I needed to be more inspired. And like, the other thing that really kicked me to start it was that, like, coming up in that DIY scene. And like, when I first listened to Green Day and was like, oh, I can do this, and picked up a guitar, I had been listening to podcasts for 5 years. And in my brain, I'm like, oh yeah, I can do this. And like, it was one of those things where it's like, I'm just going to start and see what happens. And like, I'm so glad. Cause the other thing that's been a side benefit that I didn't even think about is how much more comfortable I am to talk to everybody, just more weirder. Like, when I talk to people now, I just went out to, the biggest coffee conference in the States a couple months ago, right? It's first time I've been there since COVID. After COVID and everything, I had a newborn at home, so I wasn't traveling, but this is first time I've gone out there. And it's really weird out there because it's like 20,000 people, and I'm like it's the only place where I have like a very small recognition. Like, people be like, oh, there's the dude that does the Brandywine badge.
Right.
And everyone that came up to me, I just started talking to them about weird stuff, being like, so what do you think about all this crazy cultural stuff? Do you love how weird things are getting? And like, just start talking to people. And I'd be like, I think that stories are going to change the world. I think creativity and imagination is what's going to save everything. And like, I got really into being much more comfortable with talking to people about those weird things, even to the point where one of my favorite stories that I have now is on the plane out to Portland. I was flying. It was me. It was this old kind of hippie-ish lady. And then there was like a real business young dude next to her, right? And those two are talking and I'm ignoring it. And she's getting really heated because he's going on about how he's buying property in Detroit, even though he lives in Portland, to like flip houses in all these poor neighborhoods. And she's like, you're ruining America. And like, you know, she's probably right. And like, I just don't want to listen to any of this. So eventually he mentions that he's from Bremerton. That's it. Sorry. Bremerton, which is home of the Liminal Earth dudes and the Bremerton shrimp. If you're familiar with that whole story, the giant man-sized shrimp that the lady saw in her basement. So I hear him say that and I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask this dude if he's ever heard of this giant man-sized shrimp that this lady encountered in her laundry room. And he's either going to think this is the weirdest thing and just stop talking, or it's going to change the conversation. And I did. And I was like, hey, have you ever heard of the Bremerton shrimp? It's kind of like your town cryptid. And I told him the whole story and he's like, I've never heard of that. I no clue. And he just stopped talking. But the lady next to him that was getting in a fight with him, she turned to me and she goes, have you ever heard of Terrence McKenna? And just starts talking to me about McKenna and like all the weird psychedelic, and like the rest of the flight, like me and her had this lovely conversation about like where, like all the weird stuff we like to talk about.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, okay, I would have never been that comfortable doing that without this podcast and getting comfortable talking about these things with other people and stuff.
Well, yeah, you're unlocking something about yourself and you're allowing yourself. I mean, like the thing is, I think a lot of people are, I think almost everyone's weird, but they sort of feel like once, like, I feel like, maybe one thing I bring to like, I'm not sure this sounds like narcissistic, but I'm like, I feel like one thing people who know me like about me is I guess allow them to be weird because I so easily want the conversation to go to like, not like what's the weather up? I'm like, what does all this mean, man? You know, like I'm basically like, you know, bong hit territory dorm room guy as an adult, you know, like I still do like talking about weird stuff all the time. Like, I get bored with, like, you know, like, oh, Joey, watch that Breaking Bad. I mean, we can talk about media. It's fun. But, like, no, actually,
what do you think happens Breaking when we Bad die?
Culturally. Exactly. I mean, like, one of my buddies, Jake, always jokes around. He's like, well, if you've been around Steve for more than 5 minutes at a party, he's going to ask you if you've had a paranormal experience. And he, like, makes fun of me as like, that's like almost like a dumb quirk I have. But I'm like, yeah, I am going to ask you.
Yeah, no, 100%. Dude, 100%. It's such a better way, and it's such a more fun way to live. Like, that way of, like, experiencing things. I learned a lot from touring with bands early on and staying with people that we had no clue who were. And a lot of the times, the way that you break the ice or get to know these people is by talking about weird stuff and, like, getting into those weird conversations, or like hanging out and listening to Art Bell late at night, or, like, you know, like, there's something about that connects people way faster. And, like, I think that's one of the things, like, the more comfortable we are talking about that weird stuff, and we do it in ways we don't even recognize. Like, I think we have this, like, this self, I don't know if it's like a preservation mechanism or something, but we separate ourselves from the weird, and we do it unintentionally, I feel like. But, like, I think, like, if you look at linguistics, it's all in there. It's all, like, even just the way we, like, certain colloquialisms, it's just like the whole, you know, my heart says one thing, but my head says the other. And, like, these things that's like, oh, well, you're talking about this, like, two different beings living inside your body at once. Let's talk about that. Like, there's these cliche things that, like, people just say, and they don't realize how weird what they're actually saying is.
And like, I hesitate to even say this because I feel like it's, people could construe it as conspiratorial, but, like, I do think control systems where, you know, every country is under some sort of a control system, right?
100%.
I mean, you know, even down to your job, it's all, there's all control systems everywhere.
That's what society is. Society
is what society is. It's a control system, right? And I feel like it behooves any control system to keep things as normal, as white bread as possible. Because when people start asking questions about what's underneath the layers, that's when the control system can get a little shaky. You're like, wait, are we doing this? Like, you know, and I think the pandemic, where there was all, you know, I knew so many people, I mean, myself included. I love LA. I didn't leave, you know, I went to be closer to my parents because, you know, they're like 80 years old. And I was like, you know, during a pandemic, I was like, they can't really be by themselves, you know?
Totally.
And so that was why I left. But I feel like if you didn't have some kind of radical change, you might have missed the boat. It was a perfect time for self-reflection. We were all, like, forced to, like, you know, I mean, you can only watch so much TV and play so many video games. After a while, you're like, man, what does my life mean? And am I happy with where I'm at? Is there, like, a adjustment I can make? I feel like so many people made really positive adjustments.
Totally.
So I don't see the pandemic as, like, while we lost a lot of people and it was divided our country even further, but I do think there was some positive things that happened for people.
I go back, and again, I've talked about Ram Dass. That's funny. I had Chris Ernst on last night, and we did a whole thing about
Chris Ernst, dude. He's
my favorite. We've done a couple comic roundtables together with Super Inframan.
I love him, too.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
He's
folks.
Great.
So good. And Chris kept bringing up Mayor Baba last time we were doing the comic book, and I was like, dude, we have to do a separate podcast all about this stuff because I love Ram Dass. Ram Dass was that was one of, you know, he was mainly Neem Karoli Baba, but definitely had interactions with Mayor Baba, same lineage of mystics, right? So I had him on, and I feel like the whole thing just turned into a Ram Dass lecture, or, like, you know, quoting, which is, it's going to be a super fun one. I'm really excited to
I mean, Chris is so smart.
Oh, dude, one of the smartest. And, like,
he has such personal experience with this stuff. Like, I saw him give a lecture at the Strange Realities Conference last fall, and he gave an amazing lecture on, like, Mayor Baba and that whole, like, movement, you know? Like, I'm like, oh, my God, it blew me away.
It's beautiful. And, dude, why did I just bring that? What was it? Okay, I lost my train of thought again, but that's okay.
Hey, man, is okay. We'll find it.
It'll get back there. I think what I was going to say was that there's this thing where, there was a Ram Dass thing, Ram Dassism that I was going to go through, but that's okay. One of the things that I did, I just realized that we've been talking for like an hour, and I've barely, I don't write down questions or do anything.
Hey man, streaming conscious is the best way to do it.
Absolutely. So one of the things I did want to actually ask you about, though, is the research you're doing into Nebraska, right?
Yeah.
And you just mentioned you're like looking into weird stuff that's not just cryptids and things. Is there weird like folklore or things that you've been finding in Nebraska that are just not paranormal related? Like I've been doing similar things with Delaware, right? And here's an example that I love. We have a Fountain of Youth in southern Delaware that's been there since 1680, right? And it's still like a place that people go and like, you know, journey to, and like there's this whole mythology behind it. I was like, that's not paranormal like at all really, but I had no clue that existed until I started looking into like high strangeness cases in Delaware. And those are the things that I'm starting to like look into more and having more fun with. There's these little like little culture, like have you found stuff like that in Nebraska that has been fun?
Absolutely. In fact, one I just kind of discovered like a couple weeks ago is that, gosh, in the early 20th century, kind of the very turn of the century, there was a group of, basically it was a cult from Wales. Whoa. And they thought like the land looked similar to where they were from in the countryside. So they moved to this place. Well, it didn't have a name. It was like Nebraska had been a state for like 20 years at this point. And they homesteaded this land area called Wymore. But they were basically kind of run out of Wales because they were way too extreme. Like they were super misogynistic, like didn't drink coffee. It was like Mormonism mixed with Scientology, but on steroids.
Wow.
Super strict. Yeah. Like no dancing, no anything. But they found this place in Nebraska, and the main dude behind it was something Wymore. So they called the little town Wymore. But this place, they kept all their traditions. And like people were, I mean, the women were very unhappy, you know, like, and so there's almost all this like pain and, you know, not to use a Twin Peaks term, but garmambosia, pain and sorrow.
Yes. The beans were always just like the grossest thing.
Oh,
like,
the cream corn. Yeah.
The cream corn. That's what it is. Yes. Yeah, no, yeah, that's just like viscerally like gross.
Exactly. Me too. It's horrifying. But funny enough, this little tiny town, and it ended up having like all this kind of warring with these like rock miners who they were like killing each other, burning down their buildings. But then in kind of like the 50s and 60s, there's all these paranormal stories of like these houses all over, like multiple houses had like extreme poltergeist activity. Two of like the like little storefronts are like now haunted. There's been like, I think, three different paranormal shows who have come.
Dang.
That's and wild. Like they don't go anywhere in Nebraska, but they go to Wymore. It's got like 1,500 people in it. Like, what the hell's going on in this place? And it was nothing until these kind of cultish Christians moved there and inflicted their belief system on this, so, like, you know, land that was probably stolen. You know, like, and so I just found it kind of interesting where I didn't know about the paranormal history of Wymore, Nebraska, until I followed the trajectory and what happened with this like weird cult. And that's the cult amazing. Is still there today. Now they've kind of like, you know, put a new veneer where it's like, oh, it's a really happy, positive thing. We're, you know, like respecting our old traditions, but the old traditions are
Too great.
They're messed up, dude. Like, but I'm like, oh, it's so funny that, you know, like, I feel like, you know, gosh, you know, I do like the idea of window areas and these kind of like paranormal hotspots, but I'm starting to like back away because I did not know Eastern Nebraska had so much stuff until I really started looking at, one, the high strangers, but two, the culture and how the entire place was like founded and why they moved all along the Missouri River. Yeah. A lot of it was money because they could, you know, import, export thing. There was precious like mining creosote there, but there was all these tragedies.
Yeah.
So many of the tragedies, especially like when like Lewis and Clark like came to the met with the Odo Indians, but what they leave out of history totally screwed them over. Borrowed all their stuff, you know, like they repaired their canoes and like did all this stuff for them. And then there's like, we'll send you money later. They never did, you know? So there's so much of the messed up history is along Eastern Nebraska. And that is really where the weirdness is.
I think about that stuff in so many ways. And I think I always land on the same way I feel about like, you know, nuts and bolts versus psi and like all that. I think it's both. I think it's a little bit of everything. I think there's parts of like, you know, I think not in the same exact way, but around us, we have like Lancaster, which is the biggest population of Amish community in the country. And the whole, Pennsylvania Dutch culture that Tim Renner talks a lot about. That area, it's like an hour and a half away from me. Once you get there, it feels weird. Like the air is different. And it's one of those things where I'm like, was this culture brought here attracted to the land because of how weird it feels here? Or does it feel weird because of the way that they, live here?
It's weird because most of my life I've sort of been into the idea, for example, that Skinwalker Ranch is weird. And then, people experience things because the land is weird. Or are we enchanting land or inflicting our culture and belief systems on land? Maybe weird stuff reacts to it. I'm just not sure because I guess my whole point of the Eastern Nebraska talking about that is I did not know it was a hot spot or a window area or a thin area.
Totally.
But I think it is. And absolutely. I wonder if you really examine any chunk of land in the United States or anywhere in the world, I think every place is a window area.
Yes.
Maybe.
You nailed it. 100%. No, that was exactly the historical ties to all of this stuff. It's very Delaware is one of my favorite examples because we are a war state. We're DuPont. We're founded on people that make death and destruction. Yes. In every way. Not only that, but Dover Air Force Base is where if you die overseas, the bodies come into Dover Air Force Base first. Get flown there. One of my friend's moms growing up worked there and that was part of her job was checking in the bodies and stuff. So there's all of this heavy liminality and all this stuff, but it's not we're a hot spot. It's not you hear about all this crazy stuff happening all the time and UFO reports,
right?
But once you dig in, tons of weirdness. I could make a case for all of these spaces being a window area if I really wanted to, I could use the history to back that up and be look at all of this, crazy. So I think you're right. I think everywhere kind of is a hot spot, and it's all magical interaction,
It is. And, and this is obviously an untested hypothesis I have. It's just a thought experiment. I feel if you would have asked me 10 years ago, I'd be we Nebraska has some quasi-famous UFO cases, some dumb Bigfoot, things that don't sound pretty shaky to me. But until I came here, I was oh my Lord.
You were just saying that, as far as you're looking into these and, a couple years ago, what you would have said a window area is and whatnot has changed. Right. And one of the things that I definitely love to kind of play with and think about along these lines is how much of essentially how much of this is guided by an outside force or hand. Right. My brain just came back to me about what I wanted to say about Ram Dass earlier. Mm-hmm. Is that I love the idea of a force that guides culture and makes these changes that may seem negative to us in the current time, but they're things that are, beyond our understanding right now, right?
Right.
All these bad things that are happening. And one of the things that Ram Dass or a lot of these people will say is, it's all perfect. You have to get used to the idea that this is all perfect. Everything, the baby that just was born and died 5 minutes ago, the person that just had 10 orgasms in a row, the, serial kill, it's all perfect. And that concept is so fucking still to this day. It breaks people's brains and it makes them just completely check out. Those are those are the kind of concepts that could be imbued into the paranormal world a little bit more. And when you're looking at something the window areas and those things, it could be all of it. And it's probably being guided by forces that the whole point is that we don't understand them and we'll never understand them. Live with it is to accept and say, okay, this is all perfect because it is the way it is. And that idea that thinking about the miracle it is for us to just be living and talking right now, how many little things had to go right and wrong for us to be here is a really powerful idea to me. And you have to take that with the idea that it's all perfect, even the bad stuff. And I think imbuing that into some of these paranormal things that seem a little bit more people get hung up on is the window area thing one way or the other, but it's both. It's cool. It's both. Don't worry about it.
And that's exactly true. I do think You know, I agree with you. This stuff, I mean, like, my feeling is it's not ever going to be understood, and mm-hmm. it's not meant to be understood. But there are a lot of people, probably even more people, who are into this stuff. You know, UFOs, for example, who are on the quest for certainty.
Yes.
And yes. That's what I think that, and that, not that I shouldn't say it bothers me, but I feel sorry for people who are putting so much mental energy into UFO activism, where I'm like, you're never going to get this. Even if like the government shows you a craft, right? Or what gives you these answers, shows you the evidence that you believe they have. What is it going to tell you? Nothing.
Yes.
It's going to just raise more questions, which I think is good. I think, like, you know, Greg Bishop probably says, like, what can we, you know, and like Jacques Vallée said this, I think maybe Greg got it from Jacques, where Jacques's like, we're not going to find out what this is, but what we can do is figure out how to ask better questions.
Exactly.
And I think, like, that's what my journey is in this stuff. Like, 100%. How do I ask better questions about this? And I feel like every year I am, you know?
Yes.
And I'm working hard at it, you know?
And it... I love the idea of thinking about what this stuff says about our humanity, and like what it mm-hmm. says about us as like a species of weird fucking sentient flesh bags that can be self-reflective. Right. And like that's like one of the, like, to, I love the ideas of so many people like Jacques, or I mean, so many people have put it way better than I could ever put it. But I think that part of grappling with these things is to get comfortable with the not knowing and the living in the capital M mystery, that we're never supposed to figure it out. It's supposed to be. And like, I think about the people that get stuck in that nuts and bolts disclosure realm. They're the people that took the 5 grams of mushrooms at a party, but never got past the party aspect. They just kind of got stuck. Yeah. They never like went into the dark room and communicated with the mushroom spirit, like Terrence recommended, right? Like I feel like the point of the UFO is kind of like the psychedelic, to remind us that there's this novelty and this weird stuff going on. But if you don't move past the fear or the government disclosure or these other things, then you get stuck in that air. And again, the 9 millionth time I think about Ram Dass, he talks about this idea of like, you can't force these things onto people. People come to these ideas when they're ready to. All you can do is stand out in the street and look like you're having the best time ever and playing like the best game of stickball you could ever play. And eventually those people are going to want to come and join your game. You just have to lead by example and be the people, you know? So like, I think the more that we have people like you starting your podcast, and the more like that, like people like Greg Bishop or mm-hmm. or Jeffrey Kripal or all these people that have these beautiful ideas, the more their voices are amplified outside of like academics and academia and stuff, the more that the narrative can change, and the more I think that's the real, and I'm going to wrap this up in a minute, but I think that's where like us as creatives and artists and the kind of like creatives first, weirdos second, I guess, for lack of better terms.
We
have a kind of fun role to play of like transferring those ideas from Greg Bishop or Jeffrey Kripal into like fun comics or movies or narratives that can change the folklore and the mythology. Absolutely. Because I believe 100% in that Grant Morrison line that we are all just like the ideas and mythology of the culture. And like the only way to enact actual change is to change the cultural mythology. Like without that, we got nothing.
And I actually think like John Tenney is a really good example of a living embodiment of that. I'm not saying he's intending to do this, but because he is such a positive, sharp, funny guy, his mm-hmm. take on this stuff and the way he lives, I think people say, I want to be a part of that.
Yes.
How do I experience this weird phenomenon and weirdness in general the way he does? Because he's able to synthesize it, talk about it in such a way that makes you feel like it's just like a big warm hug.
Yes.
100%. And so when I look at him, he's playing that great game of stickball that I want to come join in on. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think like, not that he would ever do this because he doesn't. I'm sure, you know, he's a humble guy, but like, he is like a great ambassador for the weird, for high strangeness. Not the 100%. Nuts and bolts stuff per se, you know, like he's not going to break down the walls of Area 51 and show us what kinds of technology they have. But he allows people to be weird and be like, hey, man, this is great. What a fun way to infuse weirdness into my life. I think he is so important and will be a guy who will continue to be important for a long ass time.
Dude, 100%. You know? And one of my favorite things from getting to talk and interact, like one of the reasons this podcast exists is because of Tenny, not just because of what I said earlier, but like when I started this podcast as a way to like do a little bit more for the Patreon thing that I was doing to support the zines and the comics I was making. One of the first people that bought Personal Folklore, which is my little weirdo comic anthology, was John Tenney. And then he talked about it on a random podcast. Like when I saw Tenney buy, I was like, oh shit, that's fucking like that. Yeah. Like I blew
this
my mind.
Real,
like,
man.
Yeah. And then like for him to receive it, read it. And then he was on a podcast and they asked like, what have you been enjoying recently? And he talked about my, like, it was obvious he read it and enjoyed. I was like, okay, that's like, that's too much, but it gave me the confidence to like start this and keep doing what I'm doing. Cause like, he is like, so, again, like just so positive. And like the way, the thing that gets me most excited is when he talks about talking to, going to schools and giving lectures to kids or like writing a kid's book. Because I think like right now we're all fucked. Like we're who we are. Like anyone our age, moving the needle on like people like us, like that's tough. Right. But like my kids, like I'm trying, and I've talked about this a lot. I've fallen into a little bit of a paranormal parenting podcast sometimes where like I'm trying to introduce them to these ideas and make sure that they get the curiosity and that enchanted world feel more than the antagonistic, like scary feel. Like when I think about what I grew up on, like Ghostbusters or Scooby-Doo, it was like the other, the ghost that was the bad guy. You have to hunt the ghost. You have to debunk the carnival barker. You have to like unmask, you know? So like, I think that puts a certain perception in the way that we view these things growing on. And there's like this disconnect for people who get into this stuff later, where like they'll come into, and this actually goes back to Lynch in a weird way, but like they'll come into high strangeness, or I guess quote unquote true experiences, right? Like via the lens of, I love horror movies, so I want to listen to real ghost stories. And there's this disconnect. There's this like horror movies are not like when you read a real case of high strangeness, it's not linear. It's all over the place. It's not like a big payoff, no jump scares. Like when you start
they're Lynchian
portrays like the paranormal experience correctly. But like most people that are coming to this stuff from that pop culture, like Halloween, Michael Myers, Paranormal Activity, that type of thing, they're like, this stuff is bullshit because it's not what they are primed for. You know what I mean? There's 100% a disconnect for it. Like,
it really,
and I think that like Tenney is a good way to bridge that gap. Like he is like the thing that kind of can take those two worlds and mesh them together and be like, it's not what you thought it was, but it's better.
It is. It also excites, like every time, like, I do hear Tenney talk about it, or even like he can send a tweet out that excites me and like makes my day better, to where I'm like, yes, I forgot why, you know, what makes me happy in life. And that is weird stuff.
Yeah,
you know, totally. he's a constant reminder of the beauty of weirdness, you know, and like, you know, we all have our like ways how we got into this stuff. Like for me, when I saw Twin Peaks, when it came out, I was very young, like 12, I guess. And it triggered something in me 5 minutes into it. And I remember like being changed. Yes. It was like almost I had this psychedelic 5 dried grams of mushroom experience as a 12-year-old. And I was never the same. I mean, like, I feel like I'd be selling life insurance in South Dakota had I never seen Twin Peaks. I'm not even joking. Like, I never would have become an actor. I never would have been like, you know, gone for the arts or leaned this heavy into weirdness without seeing that. It was, I think for a lot of people in our generation.
Yeah.
That had the same effect.
And it's so like, it's one of those things that is so endlessly gratifying because there's so much to learn about and there's so much to like dig into. And like, it's one of those special pieces where it's not just a singular auteur, like it's the combination of Lynch and Frost. Like it is the two of them together, like without the campy, like soap opera stuff that Frost, like, and I didn't even realize until way later how much of the esoteric stuff's all Frost.
It's,
like
it's all Frost.
Lynch is just the surreal, like
he's the visual
thing. Yes, and like putting it together. But like when you get those books that Mark Frost wrote, like this, like you're like, oh, this dude is like way more into the esoteric than I ever knew.
I mean, like, in a massive way. Like he's read the same books we read.
Exactly,
you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
He doesn't talk about it, and he was able to like give this palette, you know, this partially done palette to David, and Lynch is like, oh, I'll take it from here.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you for the inspiration. You know,
and they created like the singularly scariest thing that I still have. Like that final scene of the second season when Coop looks in the smashed mirror and it's Bob looking like that is the scariest shit I've ever seen to this day, because it's just that idea that like the most pure character, the most pure archetype of good can be corrupted, and it's all in us. It's all, both are in us all the time. And it's just a very lucky thing that the other side is not coming out in that way. And like, it's just, it lets you know how out of control of all this we are in a very scary way as a young kid.
And then, you know, season three, which I, to me is my favorite. It's my favorite thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And he took that idea and made a whole season of TV about it, where like, and like, so there was a lot of people who loved Twin Peaks for the campiness, like, oh, cherry pie and coffee, which I love too, obviously. But he was showing this new world of Twin Peaks where like, no, the bygone era is gone. People are doing hit and runs and, you know, drive-by shootings. It's violent. There, people are, don't care about each other like they used to.
That kid and scene I haven't watched again since. Like, I can't.
It's
like,
awful. It's, just, it's an awful scene. But
I watched it as I was expecting my first kid, and I was like, didn't need to see that.
No, no, but he's making a strong point.
And the juxtaposition of the scene before with what's his name from the trailer?
Harry Dean Stanton.
So that's like one of the most beautiful juxtapositions that, like, again,
drink
like
coffee in a park.
So beautiful. And like the way he handled that made the campy scenes hit. So that, that scene with Ed and like Norma, that was the Otis Redding scene. That was one of the best scenes on like ever. And like,
I think about it and I start crying.
I'm getting goosebumps right now.
Dude, it's the most beautiful, like, you know, unrequited love. Like finally they do. I mean, like, I remember just tears streaming down my face and going, thank God there is beauty left.
And like the fact that they went with that live track of Otis and like the whole thing is just so fucking perfect. And like these goosebumps I'm getting right now, this is what started it all. I remember like watching a Simpsons episode as like a 13-year-old kid and getting goosebumps at how good it was. And I'm like, how does that, where does that come from? What is this thing that I'm feeling right now? And
you're feeling magic.
How is TV making me feel this? Or like, you know, like, and like, I'm like, I want to make people do like, that's, this is my new life goal. Like more than like making art, right? Like I want people to get goosebumps from the things that I put out in the world.
And there's something very unique about Simpsons and Twin Peaks where those were two shows. And I know just because of being a, you know, amateur media historian, I went to film school and all that bullshit, but, those two shows were completely left alone. Like Lynch, when he did not want to do a TV show. And but like, you know, the guy who was at ABC at the time loved his movies. And it's like, he's like, look, you can pretty much do whatever you want. If it doesn't work, you know, God bless. But like, it did work. And it, I mean, it changed the landscape of TV. It changed art.
Yeah.
To where it put surrealism in the mainstream. I mean, that is a major thing. I don't know what where we'd be without it, to be honest. Even if you 100%. Didn't watch it, you are affected by Twin Peaks, even if you know it or not. Like, to me, it was one of the biggest infusions of magic into popular culture ever.
100%. And it changed, like you said, it changed not only the media landscape, but the cultural landscape in general. And it introduced, like, these... Lynch introduced a whole new visual vocabulary. Like some of the scariest shots in Twin Peaks are like the camera at the bottom of the stairs in the Palmer house with just the fan spinning in the shadows. Like
I never looked at a ceiling fan since. I'm terrified of them. I'm not even joking. Like I'm scared of ceiling fans.
Just the story of how they found Bob and the, you know, the dressing, like it's all so perfect. And I think you're right. There's something to it being left alone. And like Lynch's whole career was like that. He's like, I don't know how I got to do any of this. Like when he was talking about doing Elephant Man and stuff, that's one of my favorite things to listen to him talk about, because he's like like I don't know, like
it was Mel Brooks who got in that job.
Exactly.
Mel Brooks went and saw Eraserhead and goes, that's the best movie I've ever seen in my life. And then he called David Lynch's, like, I don't even know if he had an agent at the time, you know, he was just like a struggling, like broke ass dude. And he said, a young Charles Lindbergh walked in. he looked like a young Charles Lindbergh. And immediately I go, would you like to do Elephant Man? And Dave was like, sure. And it was like a 5-minute meeting. And David Lynch was like, I guess I'm making a movie in England.
I remember, I love that. Like when Lynch tells that story, he's like, I thought I was done. Brooks is going to hate me. He's going to say, who is this guy? Like who would ever think Mel Brooks would like this movie? Like, and
Mel Brooks is why we have David Lynch, man. Like, I mean, like, beautiful. a lot of old Mel Brooks movies, but I feel like the best thing he ever did was give us David Lynch.
Absolutely, you know? Dude. And like, I think there's just like, so yeah, man, we should do a whole nother podcast on just this stuff because
yeah, I'd love to. If you ever want, I could talk David Lynch for hours, man.
Let's do it because I would love to get into it way. Like again, not only his movies and his art, but just his general, speaking on creating and stuff. I've taken so much from like his book is one of my favorite things I've ever read. And like,
well, I can tell you about, I've met him twice, so I can tell you about those experiences too. Yeah.
Dude, okay. All right. I have to go because my,
man,
go for a nap here. So we're going to do this again, Steve.
We shall continue this, my friend.
Yes. And on your show very soon.
Yeah. Well, you're coming on my show next month. So
yes, you let me know. I'm there. This was,
maybe we'll do a swap cast of like a Twin Peaks roundtable. Cause Chris Ernst is, feels the exact same way we do.
Yes. Let's do it. Let's do it. 100% on board. I want to do more roundtables. They are super fun. And I feel like you're a great example where I'm like, we all know the same weirdos. I should just be able to like as soon as you started the podcast, I was like, great. Now I can reach out to Steve and we could talk.
Absolutely, man. Like, no, it's great. Yeah.
The more kind of connect those like things is the better. Oh,
it fills me up with just good stuff, my friend. So this has been so much fun.
Totally. Well, dude, before we get out of here, tell people where to find the podcast or anything else you want them to check out and all that good stuff.
Sure. It's called High Strangeness, like H-I, like I'm, you know, saying hello to strangeness. And you can find it on Spotify, Apple, all that stuff. And my social media stuff is Bergmaster5000. And I will post about weirdo stuff every once in a while. So, that's where you can find me.
Wonderful.
And, you know, if you want, you can watch some of my TV or film work. You can look at my IMDb thing and I pop up, you know, as a little character actor here and there. So
that's awesome.
There we go.
I did see Bob's Burgers and Adventure Time on there. And those are my two. Like, I was like, ooh, those are things I'd love to know. Like, voice acting is something I am incredibly fascinated by.
And I love it too.
I feel like it's a whole world in its own. Like, when I hear, Billy, why can't I remember his last name? One of the Fry. Yeah. Wait, is that his name? He does like the voice of Fry and like, is it now?
I'm oh no. Oh God.
It's going to really,
my memory's
me
so bad. Yeah.
Cause he's one of the only voice actors I've listened to with like, you know, actual, I don't know. I feel like I never hear anybody talk about that stuff. Oh, well, I sound like a dummy here. I'm not going to look it up. but yeah, dude, I'd love to get into more of that stuff, too. I didn't even get to talk to you about your acting or what got you into that world and all the things
it's pretty simple. Twin Peaks. I mean, like,
so I guess we did talk
I'm not
about
even joking.
It.
It's like I'm really boring in one note. Twin Peaks got me into everything. Yeah,
that's perfect.
It saved my life.
Well, so for anybody who has not experienced the wonder that is Twin Peaks, go do that. That'll be how we leave this podcast. Because
I agree.
It's very like anyone. There's so much goodness. It's such a
start from the beginning. Watch Fire Walk with Me before season 3. Do it right. Get some popcorn and prepare to be changed.
Yes, totally. Awesome. Well, Steve, enjoy the rest of the afternoon. Thank you again for being
here.
Bud. We'll talk soon.
True honor.
Bye.